Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? Podcast like it's 1999.
Podcast like it. Just podcast like it. Podcast like it's 1999. Podcast like it.
You want a podcast like it? 1999.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999, the podcast where we talk about the films of 1999 from Funky Town here in 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Nybart.
And I'm Phil Lisko.
And I assume none of you got that reference. It's a reference to something that happened to Doug's first movie, which we're doing entirely because our good friend, Teddy Theodore Bressman, has an animated show on Sci-Fi called The Pole. It's really funny. And we also wanted him to come and talk about the art of animation. We've done so many animated show movies already that his options were Doug's first movie or the version of The King and I that Phil and I decided was too cursed to even acknowledge its existence.
It is cursed.
So it's here you cursed. Go, Teddy. Wax poetic on Doug's first movie.
I feel like... Yeah. I was on this show. It's so great to see you guys just crushing it. But I feel like I was on the show like maybe 2.5 years ago at this point. And I was like, and we're doing that weird Dennis Rodman movie. And I was like, I think it's time that you guys picked another year. So I'm now doing Doug's first movie.
I mean, what's worse, though? I mean, I got to be honest. I thought that the Dennis Rodman film, which is escaping me right now, Simon Says, is definitely better than Doug's first movie.
It's one of the worst movies I've ever seen, Doug's first movie.
Yeah. It's also Doug's last movie.
That's true.
I was watching with my niece and nephew who are like 9 and 7, and they were pitching me story fixes.
Yeah.
And they were right.
My kids tapped out 20 minutes into it. It's like it was. There's
it's a rough ride.
So let's talk about Doug.
I feel like we need to now just acknowledge DMX.
Well, we should I mean, here's my question, guys. Because and I mentioned this to Kenny on text as we were watching Doug's first movie. I didn't know Doug. I don't know Doug. He doesn't mean anything to me because I am from Canada, as people know. I'm from Toronto, and I'm not sure that Doug made it over the border. Neither did really Rugrats.
Got caught up at customs.
You got caught up at customs. They were like, "No, thank you. We're good."
Yes,
but we
are a country full of Dougs. We do not need another Doug.
We don't need another Doug. We have so many Dougs up here already. So Doug is meaningless to me. So on top of this film being just insufferably boring, it also is not even a character that resonated with me. I'm assuming you guys know Doug.
I know him a little too well, I think.
I feel like I know him and don't at the same time.
He is unknowable. He's a little unknowable.
Yeah, I definitely watched that series. Like, I was excited to start watching it because I was like, oh my god, but then even the theme song, which in my opinion is the best part of the show, they like juiced up in a way for like in a cinematic scory way that immediately I was like, I don't think you're gonna get this right, Doug Krieger.
I'm gonna do my my type five.
Yeah,
his
do
name
it,
is
do
Jim Jenkins, but I'm gonna do my type five on Doug.
Okay,
and try to give a. And I have a lot of thoughts about Doug. So, Doug, for those of you who don't know, was a Nicktoon. He was one of the first three Nicktoons, along with Rugrats and Ren and Stimpy. Rugrats and Ren and Stimpy, like, really kind of exploded on the national zeitgeist to some extent. Ren and Stimpy, you know, was kind of a lot of people's exposure to kind of this gross humor that kind of became SpongeBob. Rugrats had movies. The movies were very successful. They had well-defined characters. They had interesting storylines. They had flights of fancy that made sense within the context of the world. Rugrats was a very successful show. Doug was the third one. Doug was, I want to say, kind of like the, you know, the redheaded stepchild of the operation, but not really, because there wasn't really a redheaded stepchild. The three of them were always marketed together. They were presented as equals, and everybody watched Doug. And I can't explain how this happened or why this happened outside of a lack of options, but everybody watched it. Now, furthermore, Doug, there is nothing from Doug that's like really like memorable, except for a few things. Like Doug, as you saw, Phil, Doug is kind of a wacky show, right?
It's a little wacky. It's a little
kind. It has some wacky elements that we can get into as we go forward.
Not as wacky as Ren and Stimpy. Ren and Stimpy's fucking out there.
Ren and Stimpy lives to be crazy, right? Yes, like Doug is just a little like quirky, but like. Of all the names for a superhero, calling him Quail Man, they think they're being clever there, but it's all apropos of nothing. So
what's the Beats? Beats?
The old Beats are the Beatles. It's a shitty joke. But the only thing that was memorable about Doug were the Beats and their hit track Killer Tofu.
Yeah.
Which Teddy, I'm sure you can sing. It goes, ooh wee ooh, killer tofu.
Yeah,
right. Everyone can sing Killer Tofu.
Everyone, except for me.
Except for you. There's Skeeter, who is blue. The only good character in the show, because most of these characters are very bad and very boring. Skeeter's dad had one of my favorite tics, which was he couldn't remember words. So he would start talking and he'd be like, so we're going to go out to a restaurant, have that thing. It's that meal. It's not lunch. It's not breakfast. It's that. It's a thing. Supper. He would say the other thing that you weren't expecting. And he would do it over and over again. That was it. That was the best.
It's a good bit. It's a good bit.
He would do it over and over again. That was the best part of the show.
The old forgetting words bit.
First time I'd ever been exposed to it as a child. It really had quite an effect on me. This is Doug. Doug is boring. Doug is lame.
Doug brings you nothing.
I did some reading into Doug because there is like some nostalgia for him. What did people like about Doug? What was the thing? Allegedly, it was because he makes up these fantasy sequences, which just isn't true. I didn't see, like, there's the Quail Man, but it was always a very small part of the episode. And he wears his underwear on the outside of his pants. There's nothing here. It was nothing funny. It was nothing interesting. And it didn't actually help him solve problems. And furthermore, so why did Doug resonate? Oh, allegedly, because he's a 12-year-old who deals with real-world problems. Like, that's new. We did an entire fucking episode on Peanuts and Charlie Brown 30 years before. This is old shit. He is a watered-down, dumpy, fucking pear-shaped, lame-ass, beady-eyed version of Charlie Brown. His dog sucks shit. His friends are fucking losers. And anybody who rides for Doug, I am not with you. All right.
You're too hard.
I don't think I am, man.
I don't think he is either, dude.
This dude,
I feel bad for you because, like, this movie was worse than the show. Like, this introduction to the Doug universe.
Yeah, I don't have any context.
Like, if I were you, I would fully support your decision never to pick up a like pencil and draw your way into the series because the movie was like, but I didn't understand this from a, from a writing perspective. Like, and again, this was a note that was passed on to me by my 7-year-old niece when she said there was too much Guy who's the villain of the movie. But Guy is not in the show. No.
Oh, Guy is a new character. It's true. Yes, Guy.
They literally dispensed of two of the main characters of the show, the villain and his sister.
That's not
I don't think Skeeter's parents are in the movie.
Skeeter's parents aren't in the movie. That's not a weird. All right, so let's take another step back. Teddy, when you say it's worse than the series, that's true. It is worse than the series. How could it not be? It's horrible. in 1996.
Yes.
Nickelodeon finally, blessedly, doesn't pick up the option for its, I believe, fifth season. Mm-hmm. And Doug should have just evaporated into the ether. But Disney, which was struggling at the time to resonate with this audience, particularly young men who apparently, I mean, young boys who apparently liked this show, which isn't even true, bought the show, retitled it one of the most awkward and cringy titles of all time, Brand Spanking New Doug. Like, this is a character who would never use the term brand spanking new. It made me sick as a child, and it makes me sick today. Finally, they acknowledged how horrible it was and named it the only thing worse than brand spanking new Doug, with Disney's Doug. He's not Disney's Doug. Everyone knows he's not. He doesn't look like Disney's Doug. So everything Disney did with this character is like forgettable. It's like Buffy on the UPN. It's like this stuff doesn't exist, right? But the Nicktoon stuff also sucked. And there are going to be people who listen to this podcast who are like, no, I remember Doug. Doug was pretty cool. Doug was good. Like that meant something to my childhood. No, it didn't. You haven't thought about Doug for fucking years.
Okay. So let's just, it should be said that the only reason
not all
this
nostalgia is good.
So this movie is supposed to be straight to video, which it obviously feels straight to video. It's only 82 minutes with credits. And it only comes out because the Rugrats movie comes out in 98 and it's a hit. And they're like, okay, we'll kind of dump this into theaters and see if it works. And by the way, they weren't wrong in doing so. It kind of did okay in terms of the money they made back.
It grossed in a theater like more than $100.
So for a little bit of context, Here's some context, okay? The synopsis of Doug's first movie is the school dance is approaching. Doug is keen to sign to ask Patty to the dance. Later that night, Doug sets out with Skeeter to find proof that there's a monster living in Lucky Duck Lake. The movie opened on March 26th, 1999 in sixth place. It made $1.1 million behind Forces of Nature, EdTV, Analyze This, The Mod Squad, and Shakespeare in Love, which came out the previous November and outgrossed it March of the next
year. But it had just won Best Picture.
Sure, still. Okay. But I'm just saying, like, anyway, it goes on to gross.
It was just like such a new look at Shakespeare.
It was.
That's right.
It goes on to gross $20 million. He was in love this time. It goes on to gross $20 million on a $5 million budget. That's not a bad return on investment.
Worldwide, it cost $20 to $25 million to market. So,
you saw that on Wikipedia?
No. I went beyond Wikipedia, Phil. There was a big LA Times article about this.
Okay.
Because it was. All right. So, the thing about the LA Times article that I really enjoyed reading 20 years later was the LA Times was like, Disney may just have picked Viacom's pocket of $100 million. And because Rugrats came out and made $100 million, because Rugrats was actually a beloved show that had fans and was able to extend beyond their initial premise of literally a guy writing with his pencil, but like not even as well as fucking Simon. He
really hates Doug.
It's a
bad situation because it is horrible.
I'm not going to ride for Doug.
No, but the thing is, like, I didn't expect to come at it with this much vitriol. I thought it would be fine, but like watching my kids' faces as I'm like watching this movie, which is like, you know, the plot of the movie, for those of you familiar with our podcast, is the Iron Giant, but so fucking terrible. Yeah.
The Iron Giant, but bad. Like, legitimately really bad.
So terrible. Like, everything that we were like, like, this is good about the Iron Giant, like, it's all the worst shit.
I mean, they do deal with pollution, which I guess is something. They deal with, like,
it's
you know,
very 90s environmentalism. Very 90s, like low-grade, like, pollution is bad. Yeah, we and, like, corporatism's good.
Are they supposed to be, like, stoned all the time?
Right. Corporatism's
bad. It kind
of
feels that way. It feels that way.
I didn't really even pick that up until that one scene where they're just, like, eating cookies all of a sudden. They're, like, stress-eating cookies.
As a total nonsense, I don't even want to say this. Regardless. So the LA Times article
talks about
this movie, talks about the idea that Rugrats made $100 million, therefore Doug could make Disney $100 million, mm-hmm. and then Viacom will look stupid and Disney will look brilliant. Yeah. Well, yeah, this came out before – this article was before the movie came out, so there was a sense of optimism behind it. And they're saying exactly what you're saying, which is essentially like small gamble, $5 million budget. Mm-hmm. They said $20 to $25 million
Right, so they lost money on this. Definitely.
To market it worldwide. They figured with some DVD sales or whatever, they break even, and they probably did. And like, this wasn't a disaster. It can't be a disaster to $5 million budget. But like, as considering this allegedly had a built-in audience – this was a disaster, I think, but also like it's just executives not realizing fool's gold. Like this is Veronica's closet. This is Jesse. These are 9:30 must see TV Thursday, you know, shows that had killer ratings because they were fucking between Seinfeld and ER, and then went to go anchor Tuesday, lasted a year because no one cared about them. So that's it.
Yeah. I mean, what I remember from like the appeal of the show from just vaguely like considering why I liked it as a kid, like I think I found it to be like calming, like, and it made me relaxed, I think, watching it, which may be what the appeal was for kids. But what really rubbed me wrong about the movie, and again, this was started in a spontaneous conversation I had with my 9-year-old nephew after we finished watching, was just like spitballing on how structurally the movie could have been improved. And like, it was a very poorly written movie. Like even the end of the film, like where the monster is exposed, like that is not in front of the love interest who he's trying to like shivel in a way that like is chivalrous, like protect the monster, and it's coming at the cost of like preserving this lie that's ruining his relationship. Like even that was kind of like a last second afterthought. And like when you think about it, like I wonder if at any point they were like, maybe we shouldn't have the love story of this movie be between a monster who can't speak English and a dog.
Well, can I ask a question about the monster? I mean, first of all, yes, that is a good idea. But so did the show have a supernatural component to it, or was this sort of a movie thing? Because the monster is played so poorly, right? Like in the sense of storytelling. It's not scary. It's not like it is. It's their friend sort of, but he's so kind of who gives a shit. Like it's not exciting. Like there's a fucking monster.
The Nickelodeon show was, I guess, slightly better. But I really deeply hate the show. But the Nickelodeon show was slightly better.
Phil, that's a good point because like the show put him in like bullying situations at school and like with this guy Roger who disappears from the movie, and Roger like is an iconic character, like. Whether or not, like, I literally don't remember anything from the show except I do remember Roger.
And his sister.
And his sister. And, like it was, like, mini adventures, but that a kid could get into.
Well, it's funny because, like, I'm watching this, and we all know the movie's bad. But I got to say, I didn't hate this sort of lo-fi teenage narrative that they were going for. So there's a part of me that's like, I can understand why as a television show that might have resonated in the sense of like, these are These are stories that kids can understand and can sort of, you know, have empathy for.
All right. So what I was going to say about that a second ago is part of the alleged structure of the show is there's Doug's real life where normal shit happens. Mm-hmm. And there's Doug's fantasy life where atypical shit happens. Correct. And this movie, it doesn't like blur the lines. This movie like drops that and screws it up. Right. So therefore, there is no need for his fantasy world. He's now living in a world where he can, you know, house a fucking swamp dinosaur. So that like that blows up anything that they had going before it. But like the thing about Doug that I don't think anybody should ever ride for is he's like the most he's the biggest dud of all time. He has no character. He's like all of his wants and interests are so fucking low grade basic. Like he wants a girl. He's like kind of a loser. He like has a friend. He has a dog. He likes the fucking the main fucking band that people likes. He likes ice cream. Like this guy, he has nothing going for him.
You know what just settled in for me in a pretty somewhat alarming way? Like I just thought to myself, like maybe I was just like such a lame kid.
You were a dud.
Yeah, because I definitely like was like I definitely like did identify with him in some ways. Like I never had a dog, but like
you know why, Teddy? There's a subliminal message in the show. Doug is the tofu. You are supposed to graft yourself onto Doug. And Doug takes on the flavor of you. You, I know you very well, better than almost anybody. You're not Doug. The last thing you are is a Doug.
Thanks, man.
But like, yeah, but he's a fucking blank canvas.
The record show, we do know each other really well.
He is a blank canvas. I agree with you, Kenny, in the sense that he just takes on the personalities or interesting qualities of the people around him. But to your point, Kenny, like he. You know, we've often talked about this, maybe more so in television than in features, because it doesn't seem to be as much of an issue in movies as it does in TV. Because in TV, you're looking for the investment, you want people to come back every week, and your lead character tends to be a little bit bulletproof, tends to be more protected, because studios and networks want that lead character to feel that way. This is the extreme example of that, right? Where like there's nothing to hold on to, and everyone in this show, including his fucking dog, is more interesting than he is, and that's a fucking problem. Well, like watching this film, it's just like I don't care if this guy wins. I don't want this guy to win.
But that's true also for Peanuts.
Yes,
Charlie Brown is probably the least interesting character in Peanuts, but
still
Charlie
love him though.
Brown, he has a fucking story. He has a starting. Yeah. Charlie Brown is a lovable loser,
and they got a personality.
He's also depressed. I mean,
depressed. He's exactly. Yeah. He's
love him.
That is exactly what Charlie Brown's thing is. Like life just keeps throwing shit at him, and he keeps waking up in the morning. Whereas Doug just kind of like has a nice relationship with the mayor. Yes. I mean, he has a knock on the door relationship with the mayor. I mean, come the fuck.
He's wonderbred. Like he's so fucking boring. Like I'm just truly, I hate to keep banging this drum, but
also
like,
delicious.
Well, with like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
TV show.
Sure.
As a TV show.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It was shocking to me how uninvested in this film I was and how short it was, and that my mind wandered so much watching this thing.
Phil,
they also like completely shortchanged even the character story that they were going for, because like at no point does he act selfishly. So it's like they're setting up that he's going to.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Put his love story over, like, the well-being of this monster. Mm-hmm. But he never makes the mistake of doing that. So it's right. Like, there's literally no moment in the movie where he's even in the wrong. So it's like,
All
you're rooting for is, I guess, the fate of this monster that you don't really care about. But
Urban Melville.
Ugh. I think and they that, also threw and, in and references and, that weren't like actually metaphorically real.
That's why I hate
real.
The show. You just nailed it. That's why I hate the show. And it was like one of the only notes I wrote down, right? But like, it's
fuck this show.
This show. I would love to be dick referencing fucking show.
Moby Dick referencing this show. With a font. Did I write it down? I did write. I used to watch the show mostly because nothing else is on. This is a complete nothing burger of a property.
No, but Kenny, you were right. Like, the fact that the show was about taking like the mundane middle school experience or whatever, and then attributing these like superhero like massive stakes, that is a concept. But like the existence of a supernatural being in that context is completely violates what the show is.
Yes.
In a way that is just,
but like these kids found a fucking monster, Teddy, and they seem nonplussed about it. They don't seem to fucking care.
So this is why I read through my notes again.
Okay.
I hate this show because it's all quirk, but no jokes. And it's all apropos of nothing, right? So they think, someone seems to think that calling this monster Herman Melville is just funny because it is. But it's not. It's just quirky. And so many, like, I think Judy, who's Doug's sister, is conceptually a funny character, right? But you don't put her in any situation that allows her to riff upon it, to find the games with it, to build upon this, you know, seed of a joke, like a slam. She's not a slam poet. She's like a beat poet, a beat poet in this world. Okay. That's kind of funny. And one of the reasons it reminded me of the monster of the Iron Giant was, you remember we did the episode with Emily and Libby. The main male character aside from the kid is a beatnik.
Yep.
Right. And beatniks don't really exist anymore, but the Iron Giant existed in a world where a beatnik could be a character. Roger is basically playing on this archetype too a little bit, right? Roger's kind of James Dean gone bad, right? Judy is kind of playing on something that doesn't exist anymore, like this beat poet from like the 60s or 70s. Like there are ideas there that you can like build upon and have fun with, but they don't do that because the tone of the show is so blah. Like I also in my notes, I just said it's white noise of television. It's just one of the easiest shows to put on and zone out to.
Yep.
And maybe, and I'll tell you honestly, like if I were high, I might have enjoyed this a little more and maybe I found some shit in there, but
no, not this one.
The other thing like that we should mention, because it's the only thing that's remotely interesting about the show, is that people seem to think that Skeeter is black, right? Mm-hmm. People like are like, oh, Skeeter's black. He's a black character. I don't even like Jim Jenkins, the creator, said he's not meant to be black and no one's meant to be anything. And uh-huh. Roger is green and there are pink characters and he chose colors kind of at random in an effort to make race irrelevant in this world. And that's who I think this guy is. Right. Like, I think like what it comes down to, I think he's just on some I'm going to do it for no real reason. It's all irrelevant, and it makes the show significantly less interesting.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, and it does show a guy who's just sort of like like just wants to play it right down the middle, isn't really interested in saying anything with this show either. Or at least that's the impression I got from this movie, which is because I have could not tell you what the fuck this film is actually trying to say. Like, I don't know what the message of this movie
what
is.
What does Google say? And you're 100% right. What does Google say the movie's about?
I read the synopsis earlier, which is that there's a school dance approaching and Skeeter is trying to find proof of a monster. But I'll just say this for just a slight bit more context. Doug's first movie has 26% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics, 28% from audiences. Roger Ebert gave it 1.5 stars. Said Doug's first movie is a thin and less than thrilling feature length version of a Saturday morning animated series unseen by me. Chatter on the web suggests it was originally intended to go straight to video, but was rechanneled to theaters after the startling success of the Rugrats movie. Since Doug originally started on Nickelodeon, where the Rugrats resides, the decision made sense, or it would have made sense had they made a better movie. I want to pivot to something that is perhaps the only interesting thing about this film, or at least in terms of the making of this film, and Teddy had obviously love to hear your thoughts on this. This was the last traditionally animated film to be animated with cells rather than digital ink and paint process being used for other traditionally animated films of the time. So Doug does hold some weird place in history as the final, one of the final films animated that way. And I have to say the old school animation of it is kind of lovely, but it's really the only thing that's even remotely interesting about this film.
It probably was proof that didn't make a fucking difference.
And well, that was fun. Yeah.
Hearing about the fact that it was canceled and this was like the last chance for the show. Like, this is one of the worst. I mean, I don't know this guy, so I don't want to like talk shit about him 22 years later, but like, as far as like going down swinging, this is one of the worst efforts I've ever seen in my life. Like,
he did think it was just going to be a straight to video thing, is my guess, right? Like, if you think you're making a straight to video movie 2.5 years after your show has been canceled, like, how much effort are you going to put into it?
I mean, based on how hard it was to make this short form 6-episode show, I just made a lot. Is the answer? I think that what you just said also is very interesting because, like, thinking about it, it's not about anything. Like, it's literally not, and there's no lasting feeling, memory, iconic moment. Like, it just made me, like, not want to ever watch a show that I had positive associations with before I started watching the movie.
So, I will say, and I want to just very quickly, you guys watched it with children. Yeah. And I think it speaks fucking volumes that none of these kids was remotely interested. Now, admittedly, it's been 22 years. I'm sure they were kind of bored by the look of the film, perhaps, and any number of other things. So I'm sure that there's that. But like, they weren't attached to Doug. They weren't attached to these characters. I mean, they were just like, this movie.
They did think the monster was cute. So the monster came out and she gave an ah, like that. Something like that. But like,
it was a good looking monster.
I didn't watch it with my 3-year-old who may have liked it, who really loved the Iron Giant. So maybe that would have worked for him. But like, there's just nothing there. It's just like, it's Doug. But the other point I want to make is I feel like when we put this up on social media, this is the kind of thing that people are going to get animated about. People do have positive associations with Doug, with Nicktoons, with Nickelodeon at this time. And I was the biggest Nick kid there is. Nick was like a religion to me, right? I came home, I put on Nickelodeon. I watched everything they had to offer. It mattered to me a lot. And I'm basically here to say not all nostalgia is good.
Yeah.
Like, some things that are nostalgic just are, and not even, this is the least problematic show of all time. So it has nothing to do with that. This just isn't good. This isn't quality. Right. And so I can't just like, as someone who experienced it in the moment and, had like fine memories of it, I feel good that I'm not just like blindly saying everything I watched as a child holds up or is good or whatever.
The thing that's like even the most infuriating aspect of this whole process is that like it's still unclear whether this is like in like a tonal and narrative representation of the show. So like, it's hard to tell, like, because
that's fair.
It just is annoying that we watch this movie. I mean, this movie was horrible.
That was 1999's fault. That's not our fault. That's
yeah.
I mentioned this to Kenny as I was watching the film. I tend to cut and paste the Wikipedia plot synopsis into the document so that I just have a framework to work off of. This Wikipedia synopsis was undoubtedly written by a child. It is tremendous. I'm going to read you a sentence. This is one sentence. When he does that, Bluff catches Doug and Skeeter in front of Crystal Lake after Hermit escapes into it and starts to enslave them, promising to make their lives a living nightmare, but is silenced and told off by his own daughter, Bibi, who defends her friends before then being confronted by Mrs. Dink, who hints at Bluff facing a massive lawsuit from the federal government for polluting Lucky Dink Lake that could bankrupt him and Bluff Co. unless he agrees to clean up the lake.
That's one sentence.
I mean, it is tremendous. I mean, I love Wikipedia. We all know that Wikipedia is not, you know, gospel by any means, but there was no filter whatsoever. They're just like, yeah, no, that's fine. You can just put whatever the fuck you want on there for Doug's fucking synopsis.
This is wild.
It's really something pretty fantastic. Wait,
can I just read another?
Yeah, please. Yeah.
After Hermit jumps back into the lake, Doug tells Patty he likes her, and Roger almost becomes friends with Doug, but is interrupted by the robot. The Wikipedia synopsis is good.
It's better than the movie.
I have no idea how he showed up.
There's just really great stuff. Like at the school dance, he has to make the biggest choice of his life, going after Patty or saving Hermit. I mean, listen, this synopsis was more entertaining than
you. That is the biggest choice of his life.
It's also thinking about how like lazy the storytelling was. Like, it's crazy that they decided to replace like a memorable villain in Roger with just someone named Guy.
How fucking lazy is that?
Who made that choice? Like they literally have a great TV villain who could have easily played that role.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that happens in these movie adaptations a lot, where of shows or cartoons or whatever, like The Simpsons, I think brought in some random ass fucking person to be the villain in that movie. I think I'm thinking about the first Scooby-Doo, where instead of someone, you know, whose face they rip off, it's, spoiler, Scrappy-Doo. So they do.
I kind of like the first Scooby-Doo movie. Yeah, Scrappy's the villain.
Scrappy's the villain.
I like the first Scooby-Doo movie. It's not that bad.
Well, the villain is really bad.
The villain's like, really bad.
Like, I was never a Scooby-Doo guy. I was a Doug guy.
You shouldn't say that out loud, man. Scooby's so much better than Doug. It's not even like a question.
Good, man. Like, I literally remember just like eating like Domino's pizza and watching Doug and being like, I am a happy kid. Like,
I truly don't think anybody ever chose to watch Doug. I think Doug was just something that was on.
Can I just say that the picture you just painted, Teddy, of yourself watching Doug made me think of Bill watching Gary Shandling and Freaks and Geeks and just like laughing his face off and having the greatest time of his life.
Or Dallas.
Because also, dude, like I grew up in New York City. So I was like, whoa, is this what it's like to go to school in a suburban environment? It seems all right.
That pretty much was what it was like.
Where does Doug take place? Like, where is it supposed to take place? Like, is it Midwest? It feels Midwest-y. All right. You want to just rate this? Can we just rate this and move on with our lives?
That's crazy that you can't think of the location.
Me?
I don't know that it's a real place.
No, it took place in Bluffington. I mean, I knew that.
But I mean, like, is that Illinois? Like,
Oh no, it's a. You mean like blood? Like no?
No, like,
a,
is it meant to be Midwest? I've literally never thought of that.
Is it like Springfield?
I think it's, well, I think it's really like, yeah, like Springfield, I guess, in the sense that it's like any town USA.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, it's bluffing. I mean, there's got to be, you know, there's some Pottersville going on there, you know, the fucking head of the town or the biggest CEO named the town after himself. Like, that's not a nice place to grow up. I wouldn't want to grow up where there's a family that the town is named after that still like runs the biggest company. Yeah. But you know.
It's crazy. Like I find myself sort of like tempted to watch the series, but I also know I'm not going to.
It would be hard to find. Or maybe you can find it.
It
on,
might be on Disney Plus.
Plus now. Well, not the Nickelodeon ones. The Nickelodeon ones are still
right.
With Nick. I mean the allegedly good ones.
There's no one in this movie that I'd want to hang out with. I wouldn't want to live in this town. Like, this is not a place I'd want to be. So
I think the last point that I want to make is Kenneth Lonergan got his start as a writer on Doug. Of all people.
I mean, you got to start somewhere.
You do have to start somewhere. It also goes to show there's no such thing as a bad job in entertainment.
It also goes to show there's kind of nowhere to go but up.
That's true.
When you start on Doug.
All right, I'm going to go first.
Go, please.
Here's what I wrote. I think this is quite bad, quite in caps. I honestly dislike this movie. It feels mean to go too low because it's so innocuous and ephemeral. But still, I just don't like that I even had to watch it. I'm giving it an 18.
Okay.
That which feels a little bit like taking some nerd's lunch money, but like, this, the nerd deserves it.
All right, the nerd deserves it. I don't disagree with you. I'll be completely frank. This took two sittings to get through for me. I started it. I watched about 40 minutes of it, and then I was like, "Fuck this! I got other things to do. I'll come back to this." And then I, you know, finished it shortly before we recorded this. This was a miserable experience. it really was. Knowing nothing about Doug, so having no affinity for Doug. And being forced to spend time with him and his fucking monster and his friends sucked. I gave it a 20, but having spoken with you guys, I'm going with you, Kenny. I'm riding with an 18. I don't think it deserves to. Yeah, I don't think it deserves anything more than that. And I would also just say too, like, I could agree with you more, Kenny, that like some nostalgia just shouldn't exist, and sometimes we just
leave it back there.
And it should be it. This movie was a movie that should have been dumped in fucking straight to video. And they should. I understand the LA Times article that you read, Kenny, and I think it's justified that Disney was like, maybe, like, it's worth the shot, I guess. But fuck them for making us watch this movie.
Yeah,
Teddy,
that feels also like it reflects a time where Disney might not have known what it was. Because, like,
yes,
I feel like the quality control is what, like, is the signature of Disney movies. Like, you can ultimately expect some level of quality from everything. So it actually feels like a poor branding decision by Disney in many ways. First of all, how funny would it have been if like someone cut a trailer that was like, from the guy that brought you Doug, analyze this in the adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, Manchester by the Sea.
Because he also wrote on Analyze This with like Peter
Tolan.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's like, that's a great group. But yeah, that is where Lonergan came from.
I wonder if this dude like had like a conversation with his agent and he was like, you almost ruined my life, like, you're fired, and then moved on to like Gangs of New York. I don't know. I guess I'll give it like a 15 or something. Like, I feel bad that it's like
a dick
that it's caused me to like I didn't. The thing is, I didn't need to soil my feelings about Doug because if someone would ask me about it, I would have been like, yeah, I love that theme song, and I vaguely remember parts of it being nice, but. Now I'm going to have to like tell people that I don't like it.
Here's the thing. When I asked you if you would do Doug's first movie, I did not think I was causing you pain and suffering. I assumed you were a Doug kid because, you know, you're my age and you grew up at the same time and you're obviously a Nick kid. And I assumed that this would be a nice stroll down memory lane. And all it did was remind me that watching Doug was never a pleasurable experience when I was a kid. It was what I did when I had nothing else to do. And it beat like fucking C-SPAN.
Also, dude, like my niece and nephew who their parents is like one of Kenny's really good friends. Like they really think I'm cool because I like work in TV and movies and stuff. And I could tell that at the end they were like, whoa, like this is what you get up to. Like
this is your... Oh man. Wait. How quickly did you tell them it was for my podcast?
I told them, but I don't think they understood. Like, okay. And I feel as if like going into my recent trip to New York, like I was definitely 10 out of 10 cool with them. And now I think so I'm at like a 7.
Tarnished your reputation as well.
Because like, they can never watch anything I've written because it's all like R-rated.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
this is the first thing I've introduced them to.
That's rough.
Amazing. So Teddy, tell us about your animated show.
Yeah, sure.
And how we can watch it, hopefully.
That's awesome. It's available on Sci-Fi on Demand, and the series finale is like next Wednesday, so you can watch it all like in the lead up to the final episode. But it's basically like a short form, heavily serialized version of Succession or Game of Thrones set on the North Pole. Awesome. And I do actually like it because I think that it's hopefully a new version of short form, because like the storylines that we sort of like balance in 12-minute episodes are kind of insane. And I think that like that I'm hoping is what people take from the series. Cause like it's just a really complicated show. And that might mean it's confusing. But I don't want to see what people think.
I mean, what I'm taking away is that it's a densely written 12 minutes. So I mean,
yeah, for
you
know, sure.
You gotta pay attention.
Yeah. And I mean, truthfully, the show is about like it basically is about if Bill Clinton had done the right thing in the Monica Lewinsky scandal, if that would have played out differently in American politics. It's essentially what the show is about.
But on the North Pole?
Yeah, because like when we were creating the character of Santa Claus, we really wanted it to be like a stand-in for an American president.
Sure.
And like the more we thought about like what characteristics related to our recent presidents in American history, like the good times, jolly, but also sin prone, like,
that sounds like Clinton.
Yeah, it immediately lent itself to Clinton corollaries. And then we kind of like, we wrote on this other show called Pam and Tommy, which is like kind of about, which is about to be shot. It's coming out on Hulu in the fall. And it's kind of about like, a lot of the show is about just sort of the filter of sexism through which celebrity was portrayed in the media in the 90s. So like when I was writing on that show, I read a lot about like what the media climate was, and that kind of like got me into reading about sort of like the birth of this form of partisan politics in America, like with the creation of C-SPAN, and then how like Newt Gingrich basically like made like House and like Senate proceedings into like theater in a sense.
Yeah.
To me, like my thesis is that the Republicans really were able to point to Bill Clinton as like, a personification of the left's hypocrisy and have used that for years. And like the show kind of like unpacks that. And if he had done the right thing, like what Republicans might've said. So
I'm sure they still would have lied their way through whatever the situation was.
Who knows?
That's kind of what the show
there you go.
Was at the end of the series. So it is, again, it's like, it's been like hard to explain what the show's about because it's so, it really, like that sort of element of it really does not reveal itself to the end. So I'm kind of trying to like get people to watch it now that it's all airing. Cause like,
right.
It really is. It really doesn't crystallize until the end of the season in a way that like, it kind of reminds me hopefully of like that show American Vandal, like in tone and also
sure.
in terms of like the way it sort of hit you with like what it was like, what it's like being in high school during the era of social media.
The show is the best.
It sounds fucking awesome. Yeah, and people can watch it on Sci-Fi.
Yeah, Sci-Fi. Yeah, it's available like on various NBC Universal platforms. I'm like, hoping that it'll be on Peacock soon. But I would say the easiest way to watch it is on Sci-Fi on demand.
Well, cool. Thank you for coming on to talk with us about this classic 1999 film, Doug's first movie.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.